House Labour Committee, May 15, 8:30 a.m. here in Room D, tape 136.
Our Labour Subcommittee.
Now we got...
Yes, ready to go. There, Liz.
Oh, yeah, they're excited about keep, the...
Which one?
25
Okay, we're going to open the work session on House Bill 2599.
Gentlemen, you have before you the final amendments. They are HB 2599-A5 that, because they have amended the A and Gross version of the bill. What's contained in these amendments are what you discussed at the last meeting on this bill. First of all, it makes persons registered with a construction contractor board independent contractors, as independent contractors, non-subject workers. It requires that they have a written contract for services specifying the fact that they are registered with the CCB, that they satisfy the independent contractor law, and that their work is being performed within the scope of their registration as an independent contractor. The second thing the amendments do are they invalidate the nature of the work test that was established in Woody v. Weibel and say that you cannot categorically determine a person's status either by applying that test or otherwise for purposes of workers' compensation and determining subject worker status. Finally, the last thing that you have done in these amendments is that you have incorporated the portion of the statute that says an independent contractor's registration may only be invalidated upon written notice to the registrant and upon written notice to anyone who's requested notice of that registrant status. And I think this satisfied some problems you were concerned about with the subcontractors registration being invalidated without knowledge to the general contractor.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move the dash A5 amendments.
Okay. Any objections? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Call the roll, please.
Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Edmondson? Representative Dominic? Representative Gertler?
Aye.
Yes.
Okay, any volunteers on this one? You want to do it? Okay.
He's always come back.
Pardon?
only when there's not a priority report.
Okay, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3017.
No.
Gentlemen, House Bill 3017 is the bill that contains the change penalty provisions for OSHA. Representative Mannix's office called me yesterday, and they are suggesting changes to the amendments. If I find the bill here, I can get caught up. If you will look in the materials that were distributed this morning on the HB 3017-1 amendments, Representative Mannix has proposed to delete the language contained within lines 7, 8, and 9 of the amendments, and the language contained in line 16, and I'll let him address that.
Okay.
Are you up to speed here? Maureen called me and said you wanted to delete the language.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the reason I wanted to take out the maximum allowable penalties will be assessed at the discretion of the director or the authorized representative of the director is because okay. That's a given statement of standard law anyway, and I don't think we ought to emphasize that any more than needs to be. Also, in terms of the not less than $5,000 for a willful violation, it seemed to me that we could go ahead and do that in the rules, and it was not necessary for us to put it in the statute. That's why I've changed the dash one amendments. We talked about that during the work session.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone has any questions about that. Not, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I move the dash two amendments okay. to House Bill 3017.
Any objections to the dash two amendments?
Mr. Chairman, can I take just a second to digest them?
I may ask a question of our OSHA man.
Sure. Jack, do you want to come up for us, please?
Do you have any problem with us taking out the statement maximum allowable penalties will be assessed? That's obviously your authority anyway.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Pompey, Administrative Oregon OSHA, Department of Insurance and Finance. Representative Mannix, no, I don't. The language.
How about that other, but not less than $5,000 for a willful violation? You can put that in your rules, can't you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, no, we cannot.
All right, well then we should put that back in. Okay. I haven't moved. No, I did move it, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
I moved to amend the dash two amendments to delete the striking of the language on line 16.
Okay.
We move faster.
Okay, any discussion on that particular motion?
So we'll have a minimum for a willful violation of $5,000 per the federal standard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, that means that any willful can't be levied, the fine can be levied less than $5,000. Of course, we have administrative rules, and I talked with Representative Johnson before, and you can still get into reducing the $5,000 down, you know, through negotiation.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just for the record, the previous testimony from Mr. Pompey was that Oregon doesn't need these increased penalties, and in fact, they're put on us by the feds, and I think that's pretty clear. Secondly, there is evidence in the record. I can find it right here that he showed us also that the congressional record dated October 26, 1990 indicates that the all revenues collected under this provision will be deposited in the U.S. Federal Treasury for purposes of federal deficit reduction. So what they're doing is imposing these sevenfold increases in penalties just to try and balance a budget on the backs of Oregon employers. I recognize that I may not have any support for this motion, but I move that we table this bill.
Okay, I guess that's not debatable. So do you want to call a roll, please?
Representative Edmondson?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Mannix?
No.
Representative Repine?
No.
No? Representative Watt?
No.
Representative Darby?
No. Motion fails.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I had moved to delete the change in line 16 and the dash 2 to reinstate that language. Is there any objection to that?
There wasn't any.
Okay. So we have the dash 2 pending?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. I have no further comment on the dash 2. I don't know if there's an objection to the dash 2 as modified.
Yeah. Is there objections to the dash 2 the way they're modified? Hearing none, accept those.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
Aye.
Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative Edmondson?
Aye.
Representative Garfield?
Aye. Bob, you want to carry this one?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to open the work session on 3435?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack, for your help.
Gentlemen, House Bill 3435 is the whistleblower bill. You have before you HB 3435-2 amendments, which would take out punitive damages for this particular unlawful employment practice. This bill would create an unlawful employment practice for an employer if the employee has been discharged, demoted, suspended, or any other way discriminated against As a result of their cooperation in filing complaints or furthering criminal prosecution or civil prosecution against an employer for criminal activity or illegal civil activity. You've had the hearing on this bill, and I'll turn it over to you.
Okay.
Yes. We had dash one amendments before, which had the remedies provided by this section are in addition to common law remedy. Have those been added to the bill yet?
No.
All right, I move the dash one amendments.
Okay, is there any objections to the dash one amendments?
Oldie goldie.
Mr.
Yes.
Can you, before we move on that minute, can Vicki give us the where the dash one and dash two
okay.
started from?
Go ahead.
The dash one amendments would go after line 17 on page one of the bill, and it just said that the remedies provided are in addition to any common law remedy or any other remedy. Is that what you're asking me?
Well, is the dash two Representative
The dash Reichen? One comes from Representative Reichen, yes.
Dash one is Representative Reichen.
Right.
Makes it clear that this bill doesn't limit remedies, it is supposed to expand remedies.
Thank you.
Okay. Any objections to dash one?
Yes. Okay. I object. I think if we're going to put a new cause of action here, we might as well just specify what the cause of action is and not leave it up to some creative lawyer or lawyers to dream up new and more things than we are contemplating at this time. It says that a person can receive compensatory damages. And currently it says punitive damages as well. It also allows attorney fees at trial and on appeal. I think that's sufficient. We don't need to leave it wide open for people to be dreaming new things up. So I think we'll just leave the exclusive remedies as they are in the bill here.
Are you objecting to the dash one amendment?
I'm objecting to the dash one amendments.
Okay.
All right.
Would you call a roll, please?
Representative Edmondson?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
Yes.
Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative Dominic?
Aye.
Representative Jeffers?
No. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash twos.
Okay. Any objections to the dash two amendments?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
Representative Dominic?
Could I pass for just a minute?
Sure.
Is there a passing in this?
We don't pass until we get a majority.
Okay. I vote no.
Okay.
Representative Edmondson?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
No.
Representative Repine?
No.
Representative what?
No.
Representative Durfler?
Yes. Motion carries. The motion fails, excuse me.
You're just used to saying the other way.
Yeah, you're right.
Thanks, Mr.
Chairman?
Yes.
I move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Oh, excuse me.
There is one other change, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I move that on line 10 where it says civil action, the wording be changed to civil proceeding. And then further on where it says at a civil or criminal trial, that it read at a civil proceeding or criminal trial.
Okay, do your motion?
Proceeding can include administrative proceedings. If we just say trial or action, it may be assumed to include only civil trials and civil courts, and that language wouldn't work right here.
Okay, any objections to those changes? Okay, they're accepted.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move the bill as now amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Edmondson?
Aye.
Representative Dominic?
Aye.
Representative Durfler?
No.
One.
Goes to the floor with a due pass.
Mr. Chairman? Representative Reichen might want to carry that.
Okay, would you want to carry this bill?
Please, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Oh, beg, please. Oh, please.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know she was in the room. Morning, Representative.
Okay, we're going to open the public work session on 2992.
Gentlemen, House Bill 2992 is the garnishment bill. You have before you HB 2992-3 amendments, -4 amendments and -5. -3 amendments and -4 amendments. The -3 amendments gradually increase the amount of money that is exempted from the weekly paycheck. It is currently $134. The proposal is to increase it to $150 July 1, 1991, $160 July 1, 1992, and $170 July 1, 1993. The -4 amendments would increase from 60 days to 90 days, the length of time within which a garnishment must be renewed. And that's for that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could you tell us who forwarded the two amendments?
Okay. Vicki, where did the amendments come from?
Excuse me. They both came from Murphy.
Okay, I guess he's from the collection service.
Collectors.
I'm sorry?
From the collectors?
I didn't hear. The name, Markey?
Mr. Markey. Markey?
No,
is that right? Markey. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman,
2992.
To get us rolling on this, I'll first move the -4 amendments.
That's the 60 to 90 days.
60 to 90 days.
So that gives them, it gives them longer time to use the garnishment, which would save the...
Saves a garnishment fee from the person who has to pay it. That's usually the person who's garnished.
Okay.
Makes it more convenient for the people running the payroll system.
Okay, is there any objections to the -4 amendments?
Nope.
Okay, we'll accept those.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
I move the -3 amendments.
Okay, any objections to the -3 amendments?
I think we need to discuss those a little bit.
Pardon me?
I may.
Sure, go ahead.
This is obviously a compromise between no bill and graduated increases, and I'm being very blunt about this. It's a compromise that's designed to get this bill through the House. And that's why I'm making this amendment. If we don't modify the bill, I'm afraid that we'd run into some heavy seas. On the other hand, if some people have some other ideas, open to hearing them.
Okay. Any other?
I think it's a good compromise.
Okay. You're ready to vote? Call the roll, please. We've seen that was an amendment, right?
Yes, on dash.
Is there any objections to the amendment? Hearing none, we'll accept the amendments.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Repine?
Aye.
Representative
White?
Aye. Representative Dominick?
Aye.
Representative Edmondson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative
Dracula?
Aye.
John, would you want to carry that one?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're going to open the work session on House Bill 3333.
Gentlemen, House Bill 3333 is before you with amendments, and the amendments propose to delete sections 1 and 2 of the bill, which relate to all employers in the state of Oregon, leave in section 3 of the bill, which relates to school employees and school districts, with a further change on page 2, line 3 of the bill to delete the language law or... And leave the other bold-faced language in so that sick leave means absence from duty because of a school employee's illness or injury or as otherwise provided for by provisions of a collective bargaining agreement.
Okay.
You have a fiscal impact statement before you that is indeterminate, and for the record, state employees, teachers are unable to negotiate the use of sick leave currently under the law.
With it, they don't know what the impact would be.
Correct.
Okay.
This probably, I don't know.
Okay. What's your pleasure? Do you want to introduce the amendments?
Why don't you go ahead?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I guess somebody has to do it, so I'll move the dash one amendments.
Okay. Any objections to the dash one amendments?
The amendments is to delete all the public schools, is this correct?
Correct.
I am opposed to that.
Okay.
It also includes the deletion of sections 1 and 2 of the bill.
Yeah, but the main essence, I believe, of the motion is to just delete schools, isn't that correct?
Yes.
On this one? You got a new one? Will call the roll, please.
Representative Dominic?
No.
Representative Edmondson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Can we recess or pause for just a minute? I apologize. I was talking with someone about another bill.
This is a sick leave bill. Representative Johnson, the proposal is to delete the provisions of the bill that relate to private employers or all employers and leave the provisions of the bill that relate to teachers only and leave the language so that their collective
Aye.
Bargaining agreement controls.
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
Aye.
Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative Dorfman?
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Okay.
To the motion?
Yes.
This bill is markedly different from the way it was presented originally, and it's only because I firmly believe we are going to be forcefully addressing the family leave issue in another bill that I'm willing to allow this bill to be used as, or go along with this bill being used as a vehicle to make another change in the law, which has to do with sick leave for school employees, which I think is a beneficial thing for school employees to be able to collectively bargain regarding their sick leave conditions. And it's with that in mind that I'm going to support the motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
A couple of things. In our packet, we have a letter dated April 12, 1991. I believe all of us received it from the Springfield Education Association regarding the subject. I think we do. It's a bill similar, talking about a bill similar to House Bill 3283 last session. I want to tell the committee, my wife is a member of the Springfield Education Association, is a teacher and would be affected by this legislation. I don't think that that's a conflict of interest because she's a member of a general category. However, I want everyone to know that. I certainly support giving this benefit to school employees as well as all employees. I don't want to see this bill fail. However, I understand that there's a sentiment that this issue should be brought to the chamber, and with that in mind, I'm not sure exactly how I'm going to vote on this bill, but I certainly support the concept and hope that it will proceed in some form.
Okay. So noted on
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I guess for the same reasons, but I'm not quite as optimistic that the other bill will take care of all of the concerns for many of the people who have joined on and sponsored this bill, such as the Oregon Public Employees Union, who I wouldn't imagine would be very fond of a bill passing that has nothing to do with them, and it would definitely help them if the bill were to pass in its current form. For that reason, it's not that I want to take anything away from the Oregon Education Association and the teachers. I feel that this law is important enough that it should include everyone. So for that reason, I will be voting against the bill.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
On that point, the provision that's left in the bill is a provision that redefines sick leave as the school employees. If there's a problem with the definition of sick leave as the public employees, that hasn't been presented to me. It's had to do with a very narrow issue relating to public school employees. And if there's some discussion here about sick leave for public employees generally, this bill doesn't address that issue. It addresses the statute that relates to sick leave for public school employees. And I'm favorably inclined on that statute to allow collective bargaining to define sick leave.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to call the roll, please?
Representative Edmondson?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Representative what?
Aye.
Representative Dominic?
No.
Representative Duffner?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move my, excuse me, I believe I was speaking as the gavel was falling. I changed my vote to no.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
With that, I'll serve notice of possible minority report.
Okay, so noted.
I serve notice of possible reconsideration.
Okay.
Let those guys fight it.
That's so noted. Okay, so it is passed with the due pass, and the minority report has been filed. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2726.
Gentlemen, House Bill 2726 is the bill relating to non-compliant employers and ability to object to safe claim processing. The bill has changed somewhat from the original title of the bill, and now the amendments you have before you do a couple of things. This is a compromise between the majority and minority report, I understand, and the changes are as follows. In the original bill, all the bold-faced language on the first page would be deleted, and in the first paragraph of where bold-faced language existed, the language would say, at the time of referral of the claim, the director shall notify the employees in writing regarding the referral of the claim.
Excuse me.
That's supposed to be employer, isn't it?
Employer. They've done it again.
Okay.
Where are you at?
I wondered about
line
that.
Line 4 of the DASH-A4 amendment.
So the director would have to notify the employer regarding the claim and the employer's right to object to the claim. And then in the second portion of the bill, at any time within which the claim may be accepted or denied as provided within the statute, the employer may request a hearing to object. If the order becomes final holding that the claim has been accepted properly, the employer will then be liable for the costs imposed by the chapter, which would may include attorney fees to the workers and attorney. And the amendments leave intact the provisions regarding audits and the director's ability to decide whether or not the claim has been properly handled when making reimbursement determinations.
Now, may I pick up with something?
Yeah.
It says on page 2, line 1, after the first period, there is no first period on page 2, line 1. Yay, engrossed.
I think they were doing, where's the original bill? It's the original bill.
They're amending the original bill.
They amended the original bill, would be my guess.
So it should be proposed amendments to House Bill 2726.
Yeah, not A and Gross.
Okay.
I think that's where we are.
Yeah.
I think that's my fault. The way I do that.
Okay, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I move the A4 amendments.
Okay.
To my motion?
Yes.
This reflects a compromise that was worked out between the majority report and the minority report. In terms of any clerical changes, I think council can double check here to make sure we're amending the proper bill. Otherwise, that reflects the compromise that was worked out. And I'm sure I should ask the department, I don't think they have any problem with limiting the employer to objecting to the claim during which the claim can be accepted or denied, which is 90 days from the referral of the claim, not 60 days from when the employer is given separate, when SAFE accepts the claim. In fact, it moves the time of objection up. But perhaps we ought to inquire to see whether or not the department has a problem with that.
way this would work is when the claim is referred to SAFE, you notify the employer that it's been referred. The clock starts running on the employer to tell, and you probably put in your rules some notice to the employer about if you want to object to the claim, start looking at it now and let SAFE know if you object. That if they want to challenge a potential acceptance of the claim, it has to be within the 90 days that SAFE has to accept or deny the claim.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Larry Young, Deputy Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. Representative Mannix, we haven't any problem with that language at all. We understand what it is, and that's not our problem. We just got these yesterday afternoon, and so we haven't had an opportunity to look at them, but we don't have any concerns for what we've done. There's one policy question that we need to look at. I'm not sure I have an answer for it. Under the language you've added, where the employer may request a hearing and object to the claim, that's the question of compensability is really what you're speaking to.
You want to put that in there?
Well, it might be a better word than whether it would be properly accepted. It was just one point as because
I see.
But that's not really the issue, Mr. Representative Max.
In order to become final, holding the claim to be compensable?
That was just something that jumped out. The real issue, I think that's livable with the way the language is. The real question is, Representative Max, who pays for the interim compensation when the worker prevails?
Why aren't you going with three? We're carving an exception out for them. They want three. Why can't we give them three?
I still thought that three was more than they needed. That's all. I mean, I thought they made a case for perhaps two, county payroll and all that neat stuff. I'm stretching to give them two. I thought they should have one.
Okay. Any objections to the motion?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. In the voting, we're going to then vote on whether we want to accept the amendments as presented by Representative Mannix.
Representative Dominic?
No.
Representative Edmondson?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Rapine?
Aye.
Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative Dörfler?
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I would move that on the second page we further amend it by taking out the 11 days and replacing it with 5.
Okay. To your motion?
I just don't believe you need 11 days to make out a paycheck for somebody who has quit. I think it's an inappropriate amount of time when currently they have to do it within 48 hours. I think that that's completely inappropriate.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
They're allowed to be paid at the next regularly scheduled payday. That would be the first event. If that comes first as an alternative, it's up to 11 days. Again, the person who quits is in the driving seat on that one. Thank you.
Okay.
I think also we discussed during the, or we heard during the hearings that in using some of the more sophisticated technological equipment, the programs don't allow a great deal of flexibility there. And in addition to what Representative Mannix said, I think we need to consider that as well.
Okay, any other discussion on the motion?
I just like to say that current law gives 48 hours. Going from 48 hours to 5 days is a substantial increase, and it gives anybody the ability to write a check. If there's a company that has, for example, an outside payroll company doing their payroll for them, certainly even somebody outside of your office, maybe even in another state, can get a check cut in 5 days. I just think that going to 11 days is going to make this bill totally unacceptable to a large number of people who might otherwise find it acceptable, and we aren't going to get any improvement for any employer out there as far as if to the extent there's any employer out there who currently thinks the 48 hours is burdensome, we aren't going to get any improvement for that employer by going to the 11 days. I just think that we at this point in the session need to be practical as far as what can get passed and what can't, and I don't see tilting at windmills with 11 days being productive at this point.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
I'm wondering what Mr. McCallum, who represents the Oregon Restaurant Association, if he has any comment just on this one point. If I could invite, have a question for him.
Okay.
How does this 5 days proposal fit in? You're one of the major requesters of this bill. I'm curious about how this fits in with the payment scheme that we're talking about.
Chair Durfler, Representative Mannix, the bill was drafted to allow payment when an employee quits to come at the next regularly scheduled payday.
Excuse me, I have to ask you to identify yourself.
I'm sorry. My name is Mike McCallum with Oregon Restaurant Association.
Go ahead.
With that in mind, we figure the employee makes the decision to quit. The added expense that's incurred for cutting a paycheck on an interim basis is, we feel, unfairly borne when but that employee has made that choice to leave. We feel that he's used to getting paid on a regular cycle. He would know what that ramification would be. And we feel like it's really wouldn't solve anything to change it to 5 days from the current two, because again, it still would mandate that an interim paycheck is cut, whereas we feel the 11-day period that's stated in the Dash 2 amendments allows for the bimonthly pay period to come up, even in the worst case scenario. And so we just feel like that makes a lot more sense.
Thank you for answering my question.
Mike, I'd like to ask you a question myself. I might, in event, being looking at it politically, if you had a choice of having 5 days or not a bill, how would you feel? I mean, obviously, you know what's going to happen when these bills go to the other side of the building. Chances are, with 11 days, it wouldn't be heard. If it had the 5 days, it might be heard. How would you address that? Would you rather not have the bill and have the 5 days, or would you rather have the 5 days and the bill that was written?
Chair Durfler, we'd rather have a bill. And if you feel like that is political reality on the five-day language, I'd advise you to vote your conscience on that. I think the fact is that a regular scheduled payday may in fact be a weekly payday. And in a lot of cases, that is true. And so the 5 days may still make reasonable exceptions for employers to be able to cut it on a regularly scheduled pay cycle. So 5 days would not be useless, if that answers your question.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I can be perfectly blunt here, I discussed the 5 day period with Irv Fletcher of AFL-CIO, he and Sam Domini agreed that that was a compromise that they could come to. I submit that if we don't pass a bill out of here that has their support, it may not only have trouble getting through the House, but it certainly won't get even an inkling of a hearing in the Senate. And I would prefer much more that we recognize that there are legitimate people out there who represent legitimate interests, who are also represented by people in the Senate that are sensitive to the same things they're sensitive to, go with the compromise that we've worked out with them, and get something done, and rather than just have this thing go in a black hole.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
That was the best argument you could make in favor of 5 days. I believe in political reality. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have Mr. Domini's motion to limit or change the 11 to 5. Any other discussion on it? Can you call a roll,
you already took this out, right?
Yeah.
Representative Edmondson?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Mannix?
Yes.
Representative Repine?
No.
Representative Watt?
No.
Representative Dominic?
Yes.
Representative Duffner?
Yes. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, 4-3. I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, can I go back and recall whether, or just have the staff recall for me whether or not the motion that Kevin Mannix, Representative Mannix, made earlier deleted paragraph 3 on page 2 or not?
It did not.
Mr. Chairman, before we move the bill, or I'd like to make a further motion to amend. Do you want to withdraw your motion?
No, it's appropriate to move to amend the motion.
Okay. I move to amend, further amend the bill by deleting paragraph 3 on page 2.
To your motion?
To my motion. This, as I discussed earlier, is a paragraph that would change existing law by making it so that even an employer who knows weeks ahead of time the exact moment that he's going to terminate someone wouldn't be required to give that person a paycheck when he terminates them. And I personally don't think that's right or fair. I think if an employer has no notice that someone's quitting, then obviously it needs some time to give that person a check. But on the other hand, if the employer is the one who has noticed that the termination is coming up, there's no reason that the employer can't arrange his affairs to have a check ready for that person when he terminates them. So I'd move to delete paragraph 3 on that basis.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
All right. When you're saying paragraph 3, do you mean the one about the written contract, lines 12?
No, I'm sorry. It's page 2.
Page 2. Page 2 paragraph.
Page 4, lines 4 through 7.
Defining...
It would give an employer 48 hours.
The point is, if you know you're going to let someone go Saturday morning, and then you should be prepared to give him a check Saturday morning. If you don't have 48 hours notice you're going to let him go Saturday morning, then you fall into the other category. That's what the amendment says.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
I'm going to kind of run through a little mind exercise here to make sure I'm tracking here. Subsection 1 says you've got to pay immediately when you would discharge the employee, and we describe certain circumstances. We run through this. Then Section 2 talks about if you don't have a contract and the employee quits, then they're due immediately if the employee has given the employer not less than 48 hours notice. So you kick in again. And subsection 3 says, well, the employer discharges, assuming without any notice, all wages earned and unpaid are due and payable within 48 hours. As I understand it, that's close to current law in terms of the 48 hours provision. So what we did was we provided for some exceptions, but we're following the standard 48 hours. It works both ways right now. So I would oppose the motion.
But you're incorrect as to whether or not it works both ways right now. The operative words here are when an employer discharges an employee. So we're talking about a situation where it's the opposite of an employee terminating an employment relationship. When an employer terminates a relationship, this paragraph would give him 48 hours, even if the employer knew for weeks ahead of time that when and how he was going to be terminating that person. And it is an expansion of existing law, because in existing law, if an employer knows he's going to be firing somebody on a certain day, he's required to give him immediate payment. Because the only exception to the immediate payment under existing law is if there's mutual agreement, or if there's a contract for a definite period, or if the employee quits and without notice. Otherwise, in all circumstances under existing law, the employer is required to have a check whenever the employment quits or employment terminates. And we discussed various aspects of this, but this paragraph here would expand it in a way that I don't think is fair to the employee in the circumstance where the employer knows ahead of time it's going to be terminated.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
yes,
we didn't have a proposal. The motion isn't to come up with a specific proposal that when an employer knows that it's going to discharge an employee in that situation where it's got advanced planning, you have to pay immediately. The proposal is to eliminate this, even if the employer discharges the employee on the spot without having thought about it ahead of time. So the proposed amendment goes beyond the reasons for it. I still think 48 hours is reasonable enough, so I'll oppose the amendment.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I would just raise again the political realities here. I would hate for this paragraph to foul up what could otherwise be an improvement in the law by having this bill pass. And we can. I agree that there are there is a distinction between an employer who knows ahead of time that he's going to fire somebody and someone who just wakes up in the morning and decides, I'm going to fire so-and-so this morning at 7 o'clock. But as far as the employee's concerned, the employee, number one, hasn't gotten any previous notice, and number two, the employee hasn't quit, and number three, by definition, we haven't done anything, the employee hasn't done anything criminal or anything like that. So I just would like to bring this bill back to the political realities of the Senate, and this change that's contemplated in this paragraph would not be digested or accepted by them.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
At some point, the Senate will have to amend the bill on their own. They know how to amend bills. I could understand the other discussion about what might pass on the floor, but in terms of what the Senate's going to do to a bill, I guess at some point you have to say, let the Senate do what it will. They're going to do what they want to do anyway.
You're assuming we'll get it out of the House.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, would you call a roll, please?
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Is this on
this is on your amendment to eliminate right. Section 3.
Thank you.
Okay.
Representative Mannix?
No.
Representative Rapine?
Yes.
Representative Watt?
Yes.
Representative Dominic?
Yes.
Representative Edmondson?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Bruckner?
No. What do we end up with?
4-3 that you deleted.
We deleted, okay. So the motion carries. Okay.
Mr. Chair, one further motion. Bottom of page 1, line 24. I move the handwritten amendments that are on the dash threes that we have in front of us. Stuff at the top of the page, essentially, together with the word such below.
Okay. Any objections?
Yes.
Any discussion on it?
Mr. Chairman. We're getting into some real micromanagement here as far as where we're going to go with that. It's the kind of thing that hasn't been subject to any public hearing or public debate, and it throws in some new concepts about reasonable suspicion of engaging in criminal conduct, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to get into micromanagement about termination decisions along those lines.
Okay. Any other discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Rapine?
No.
Representative Watt?
No.
Representative Dominic?
Aye.
Representative Edmondson?
Nope.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
No.
Representative Dorfman?
No. Motion fails.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move that we delete or make the same amendment but delete the criminal stuff so that it would read in line 24. Before the last word of line 24, we insert the phrase, or if the employment is terminated due to the employee's unexcused absence from work.
Could you read that as it's going to read, please?
If such notice is not given to the employer, comma, or if the employment is terminated due to the employee's unexcused absence from work, comma, and carry it on. And this is just to make it clear so that if somebody quits without by just not showing up, that they the same 5 days applies as if they had called in and said, I quit.
No objection.
Could I ask you a question? If he doesn't show up 1 day, 2 days, 3 days?
I assume that, I guess it's implied in here that an employer, that an employee has a duty to show up for work unless he's got an excuse like being sick or something. And this has the word unexcused in it. So if an employee doesn't show up for work without an excuse as to why not, then the employer has the right to assume that the employee has quit. He's not there. He's quit. And if the employee does want to continue employment, obviously the employee can come back and talk about getting reemployed. But for purposes of deciding when the check should be cut for his last hour of employment before he failed to show up, the five-day rule would apply, as opposed to immediate.
Could I ask another question? If he's, you said an unexcused absence, if he's an hour late, would that be an unexcused absence?
Those are good questions. If you've got some language you think that would tighten this up.
I'm just trying to get what your intent is.
My intent is that if somebody quits and moves to Utah without notice to their employer, the employer has the same right to give them a check a few days later that he would if the employee called and said, hey, I'm going to Utah, I quit. There's really, you know, I think...
Isn't that covered by the language in the first part of the sentence?
Because, Representative Johnson, because the other part was clear that the committee was not interested in talking about getting involved in bargaining or getting involved in deciding what is a justification for someone quitting, whether it be illegal or whatever, for that reason, I'm going to be opposing it to stand out unexcused absence. We could end up with some pretty big discussions about what is an unexcused. For that reason, I would, my idea of unexcused might be different than your idea of an unexcused absence also. So okay. For that reason, I'll be opposing the amendment.
I'll withdraw the amendment then.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I was about to say I agree with Representative Dominey, so he's changed my mind. I see his point. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
The last thing is that the current law, I don't believe, has a clause in it that exempts any of the current law from collective bargaining agreements. But I would suggest that
If there is a collective bargaining agreement, wouldn't it take precedent?
That's what I'm getting at. I think we need to make that clear here, that people can bargain to have different termination arrangements than what we're putting in the law here.
Mr. Chairman, yes. That's a matter of contract law, though. If there's a collective bargaining agreement, they have to follow the collective bargaining agreement, and that's a matter of contract between the employer and the employees. And the collective bargaining agreement can be much more generous than the law. So I don't think we need to put something in here about that.
It can be more generous.
Okay.
It can't be more restrictive.
As I say, current law doesn't have a clause in it that I see that says, except as otherwise provided in a collective bargaining agreement or something like that.
So, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
There is some boilerplate type language that has been used in other pieces of legislation that says that if there's a bargaining agreement that this law would not supersede it, and I'd like to have it in there, but as long as legislative intent and record is very clear and that nobody objects and everyone in this committee says that they agree that if there's a contract negotiated that has something better than this, like saying that they have to pay you at time of termination no matter what, if that's what a contract said, that this law would not supersede it. As long as that's clear for the record, maybe we don't have to have it in the bill. But if there's any opposition to that, I'd like to make sure it was clear here and now and put it in the record.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
I move to amend the bill to include a section which says these provisions may be varied by a collective bargaining agreement. Period.
Okay.
Fine, man.
Sounds good to me.
That sounded right. Is there? Did you do that in the form of the motion?
Yes, I move that.
Okay. Is there any objections to that? Accept that amendment,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Well, I guess the motion to move the bill is already pending, so I'll just remind you that I'm ready to do the question on it, unless people want to talk about it some more.
We do that to 11.
Let's do it while we're thinking about it.
Are you comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable with it.
Move to the previous question.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Dominic?
Aye.
Representative Edmondson?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Repine?
No.
Representative Watt?
Aye.
Representative Dorfman?
Aye. Motion carries. Sam, do you want to carry this one?
Sure.
Okay. Well, we've completed the agenda. We have to tell you, excuse me?
I have another business.
Okay.
I make a motion to suspend the rules, allow absent members to vote on bills that were heard previously in their absence.
Okay, do you motion?
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I want to go tell my colleagues that I am not knowledgeable as to the individuals who made that request. I made my personal beliefs known to this committee, and I probably won't yield on those as my personal beliefs. It wasn't the intent of my objection to cause ill feelings amongst my colleagues. I think the system itself brews enough ill feelings, but the relationship and a friendship is more valuable than the position of holding somebody away from a bill that they believe they should have their name.
Okay. Any other discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I appreciate the spirit in which it's offered. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any, we don't have to have a vote on that, do we?
Unless there's an objection.
Is there any objection? Okay, hearing none, we'll accept that. And the first two bills, the first two, I guess we didn't. Okay, we're going to open the work session on House Bill 2599. And I think we had two members that did not vote. Mr. Donnelly, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Edmondson?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the second bill was House Bill 3017.
Or the OROSHA bill.
Uh-huh.
Penalties.
Okay. Mr. Donnelly, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Edmondson?
I think I voted on it.
Did you? Okay.
Yes.
Good, right. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Chair, yes. I would like to apologize for being late. I was doing some other business.
Well, okay. You don't need to. Okay, we're going to adjourn the committee.
Thank you. I have to come.